Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. And this second hour will be, what we're going to do with it is that we're going to replay President Donald J. Trump's inaugural speech. And I hope that you got to hear it on Friday, but just in case, you'll be able to hear this replay of that speech. And it was very important in many ways because he talked about we the people, and he used the word we in our country and things like that. We also have up on our site, if you go to thesecrettruth.com, you'll find a copy of the transcript of his speech also. So not only can you read that, but you can listen to this on our radio program. We broadcast every Saturday night live from Austin, Texas, between 7 and 9. Every Saturday night from Austin, Texas on 89.1 FM. And I want to thank all those that have been listening for at least 10 years and been supporting us. And if you've listened to one program or 600 programs, we want to thank you for attending us and supporting us. But anyway, listen to this speech. It's important because he tries to place the American public before anyone else, and it's an important speech.
To introduce the Chief Justice of the United States, John G. Roberts, Jr., who will administer the presidential oath of office. Everyone, please stand.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President. Yeah!
What a great honor to be able to introduce for the first time ever anywhere the 45th President of the United States of America, Donald J. Trump.
Did I get that one right?
Chief Justice Roberts, President Carter, President Clinton, President Bush, President Obama, fellow Americans, and people of the world, thank you. We, the citizens of America, are now joined in a great national effort to rebuild our country and restore its promise for all of our people. Together we will determine the course of America and the world for many, many years to come. We will face challenges. We will confront hardships. But we will get the job done. Every 4 years we gather on these steps to carry out the orderly and peaceful transfer of power. And we are grateful to President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama for their gracious aid throughout this transition. They have been magnificent. Thank you. Today's ceremony, however, has very special meaning, because today we are not merely transferring power from one administration to another or from one party to another, but we are transferring power from Washington, D.C., and giving it back to you, the people. For too long, a small group in our nation's capital has reaped the rewards of government while the people have borne the cost. Washington flourished, but the people did not share in its wealth. Politicians prospered, but the jobs left and the factories closed. The establishment protected itself, but not the citizens of our country. Their victories have not been your victories. Their triumphs have not been your triumphs. And while they celebrated in our nation's capital, there was little to celebrate for struggling families all across our land. That all changes, starting right here and right now, because this moment is your moment. It belongs to you. It belongs to everyone gathered here today and everyone watching all across America. This is your day. This is your celebration. And this, the United States of America, is your country. What truly matters is not which party controls our government, but whether our government is controlled by the people. January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer. Everyone is listening to you now. You came by the tens of millions to become part of a historic movement, the likes of which the world has never seen before. At the center of this movement is a crucial conviction that a nation exists to serve its citizens. Americans want great schools for their children, safe neighborhoods for their families, and good jobs for themselves. These are just and reasonable demands of righteous people and a righteous public. But for too many of our citizens, a different reality exists. Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities. Rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime and the gangs and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now. We are one nation, and their pain is our pain. Their dreams are our dreams, and their success will be our success. We share one heart, one home, and one glorious destiny. The oath of office I take today is an oath of allegiance to all Americans. For many decades, we've enriched foreign industry at the expense of American industry, subsidized the armies of other countries while allowing for the very sad depletion of our military. We've defended other nations' borders while refusing to defend our own. And spent trillions and trillions of dollars overseas while America's infrastructure has fallen into disrepair and decay. We've made other countries rich while the wealth, strength, and confidence of our country has dissipated over the horizon. One by one, the factories shuttered and left our shores with not even a thought about the millions and millions of American workers that were left behind. The wealth of our middle class has been ripped from their homes and then redistributed all across the world. But that is the past. And now we are looking only to the future. We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first. Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs. Protection will lead to great prosperity and strength. I will fight for you with every breath in my body, and I will never, ever let you down. America will start winning again, winning like never before. We will bring back our jobs. We will bring back our borders. We will bring back our wealth. And we will bring back our dreams. We will build new roads and highways and bridges and airports and tunnels and railways all across our wonderful nation. We will get our people off of welfare and back to work, rebuilding our country with American hands and American labor. We will follow two simple rules: buy American and hire American. We will seek friendship and goodwill with the nations of the world, but we do so with the understanding that it is the right of all nations to put their own interests first. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example. We will shine for everyone to follow. We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth. At the bedrock of our politics will be a total allegiance to the United States of America. And through our loyalty to our country, we will rediscover our loyalty to each other. When you open your heart to patriotism, there is no room for prejudice. The Bible tells us how good and pleasant it is when God's people live together in unity. We must speak our minds openly, debate our disagreements honestly, but always pursue solidarity. When America is united, America is totally unstoppable. There should be no fear. We are protected, and we will always be protected. We will be protected by the great men and women of our military and law enforcement. And most importantly, we will be protected by God. Finally, we must think big and dream even bigger. In America, we understand that a nation is only living as long as it is striving. We will no longer accept politicians who are all talk and no action, constantly complaining but never doing anything about it. The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action. Do not allow anyone to tell you that it cannot be done. No challenge can match the heart and fight and spirit of America. We will not fail. Our country will thrive and prosper again. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. It's time to remember that old wisdom our soldiers will never forget, that whether we are black or brown or white, we all bleed the same red blood of patriots. We all enjoy the same glorious freedoms, and we all salute the same great American flag. And whether a child is born in the urban sprawl of Detroit or the windswept plains of Nebraska, they look up at the same night sky, they fill their heart with the same dreams, and they are infused with the breath of life by the same Almighty Creator. So to all Americans in every city near and far, small and large, from mountain to mountain, from ocean to ocean, hear these words. You will never be ignored again. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. And your courage and goodness and love will forever guide us along the way. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America. Thank you. God bless America.
Okay, we're back. This is George Butler back again. I hope you got to listen to that and you could see some of the key elements in that speech. I had occasion to do a recorded interview with Patrick Wood this weekend also. And this was after we had both listened to this inaugural speech and so forth. And so we sort of compared notes. And so what's coming up next is a comparison of my opinions and comments and Patrick Wood. Patrick Wood is author of the book Technocracy Rising. He also was a co-author of an earlier book in the 70s, Trilaterals Over Washington, D.C., with Anthony Sutton. So he's well-versed in the New World Order and the different implications of a technocracy that's being brought about very quickly. And so what you have to do is you have to be careful in this coming age, you could say, because Patrick Wood sees that it's very ominous, and this, he also makes note and listen carefully to what he has to say about Joseph Stiglitz, who's an eminent economist and a Nobel Prize winner in economics, had two very important things to say as far as I was concerned at the meeting that's just concluded at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. One was he was pushing for a cashless society, and we certainly don't want any part of that. That they're undergoing that in India now by withdrawing the 1,500 rupee notes. And the prime minister there has stated that he wants to bring about a cashless society, but not everyone has bank accounts or debit cards or credit cards over there. Not many people do. So I don't think it's going to work out very well for them. But anyway, go ahead and listen very carefully to what Patrick Wood and myself have to say. And we banter back and forth a little bit. And so I hope you'll find the conversation ending. And then after this clip, I'll make some concluding remarks, and then we'll call it a night for this second hour. But thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much for your support over the years. Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. I've got with me this evening Patrick Wood, author of Technocracy Rising, but also the reason why I'm bringing him on this evening is I wanted to get his comments and impressions of the inauguration day, January 20th, 2017, with a new President Trump in. Welcome to our program, Patrick Wood.
Hey, George. Good to be back with you.
Well, I tell you what did you watch it today and closely follow it?
I watched the whole thing, closely followed it. In fact, the TV is still on in the other room. Just kind of follow-up stuff at this point. I don't think there's much happening except maybe the dregs of the parade. But, yeah, I watched it very closely today, word for word. Watched all the prayers, watched all the, you know, proceedings and the oaths and the processions and all that stuff. It was very interesting.
The speech, Trump's speech, President Trump's speech was short, was it not?
Well, it was. You know, what it really impressed me, George, is he did not use the word I.
Yes, yes, yes.
And you know, I have to stress that because that's the only word it seemed like that President Obama really understood and knew. I. Everything was about him, what he did. And he used the word I all the time, very seldom used we. And Trump, I think he really connected with the American people by using we. We are in this together. We will fix it together. And I think that's a great conciliatory message, really, to send out to everybody. If there are people, and I know there are, if there are people in America who don't want to be part of the we, That's their choice, right? They can, if they don't want to be in it, that's fine. Go off and do something else. Maybe they'll leave the country. Who knows?
Right.
But I think it was a gracious extension to use the word "we" to include the American people and what's going to happen in the Trump administration. Now, we still remains to be seen, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. all those Goldman Sachs gang around him, you know.
That's right. I know. I like, basically, you want to like Trump. He's a
gregarious person, a very friendly, gregarious person.
He is. And I watched him walk down the procession way before he gave a speech and got sworn in. As soon as he stepped out of the door, people started cheering and, you know, all of his, the people he knew on both sides of the aisles, he's walking down, he's shaking a few hands. He said thank you at least, I don't know, 20, 30 times.
Right.
He's looking at people, and as he was waving to the crowd, he said, thank you, thank you.
Well, you know, you make an interesting point there, Patrick. He gives people his attention, does he? Does he not?
He does. He really does.
It seems like, I've never met him, but it seems like the people that are beginning to talk to him, he's listening to them and connecting with them on a friend-to-friend type basis. What do you think?
He is, and I think he's encouraging them and lifting them up by his speech. Now,
yes, yes.
This is a good management technique to use in any kind of commercial business. But believe me, I've worked for some big corporate empires before. Some of them are nasty.
Right.
Some of them aren't. But the ones that you really appreciate are the ones that make you feel important. Like you're really part of the organization. You're not just a piece of dirt. You're not just an asset, you know. But you're part of the team. You're part of the organization. And there's some measure of loyalty there. I think Trump has learned this over the years. If you want to get people to do what you want them to do, you have to lift them up and encourage them and draw them into the team, if you will. Make them feel important.
Well, did you notice he had a vision and Hillary did not.
Well, that's
okay.
For sure.
But also Hillary had the baggage of Obama. And she had all this expose of her wrongdoings. So that was a lot to contend with. But Trump had Make America Great Again, and people were sick and tired of the old ways. You know what I mean?
It is. And, you know, I was kind of surprised that Hillary and Bill attended the luction that they had right after his...
Okay. Were they there? Were they there?
They were.
Oh, and my gosh.
Actually, he called her out and said, thank you for coming. And I appreciate that. I don't know who talked him into coming. But that was also a real conciliatory gesture, in my opinion, to, you know, kind of say, okay, the axe is buried. We're moving on. You're out. I'm in. Basically saying you're out.
Right. You're out and I'm in. I'm the president now, right?
That's right. So why shouldn't he say, you know, thanks for coming? But he did. He said, thank you for coming.
Well, did you notice what Pelosi did on those pins?
Oh, yes.
She wanted the pin that he did sign her, whatever her bill was or whatever it was.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean,
they're all chumming up with him now, right? Because he's the president, right?
And they will.
Yeah, right.
You know, what can you expect? Even Ryan is, chumming up to him, and he hated Trump's guts.
Right. Now there's something ominous here, though, that happened today, and there was an interview that Alex Jones had with Roger Stone.
Yes.
Roger Stone had a top hat. I mean, the guy's a fastidious dresser, okay?
Yes.
I mean, when I interviewed with him, he looked at me. He doesn't say anything, but I know what's on his mind, that George is a bit of a slovenly dressed person, right?
Yeah.
Because that, I mean, style to me and all that, that's further from my mind. But he is fastidiously dressed, but also a report came out today, a CIA report stating that his name was connected into the Russians or something, okay,
uh-huh.
on some kind of email. But he said explicitly he's never dealt with the Russians, never had a relationship with them, never received money from them, never done them any favors whatsoever, never had connected with them. So he said this latest thing, though, I mean, Trump's going to have to clean out some things, isn't he? Huh?
Well, he is. And it's going to be difficult for him to reach down into the bowels of the administration. Not who would want
exactly,
to do that.
Exactly.
There are people down there that have been embedded there for 20 years who need to be fired. I mean, just send them packing. and get some new blood in there that literally have the interest of the American people at heart, not these technocrats that think they're God's gift to mankind and anything they can do goes. We just need to get rid of these people. I don't know if he could do it or not. It's going to be a very difficult task.
What's the prognosis besides that you see now as far as technocracy proceeding either speedily, or is it going to be retarded somewhat or what?
I don't know if it's going to be retarded or not. In some ways I say yes, in some ways I'm very concerned. You being from Texas, so I'll share one thing with you. The concern I have over two appointees. One is Rich Perry.
Yeah, right.
Rick Perry, and the other is Elaine Chao for Secretary of Transportation.
Okay.
Both of those people, especially Perry, were knee-deep. Actually, they were up to their eyeballs in the Trans-Texas Corridor.
Yes.
Was part of the North American Union scheme to integrate Mexico, Canada, and the United States. I'm sure you remember that because you are from Texas.
Rick Perry went over to a Bilderberg meeting, and I think he got their favor when he came back to run for president.
Oh, yes, I believe you're right.
A number of years ago, yeah.
And you know, during that North American Union debacle back in somewhere around 2004, 5, 6,
right.
Rick Perry threw, and his administration in Texas, he was governor at the time, he threw a lot of people, a lot of good people, I might add, under the bus to force the North American Union, the Trans-Texas Corridor, which was a huge, wide, using eminent domain to grab up land left and right to build this super freeway from Mexico, deep in Mexico, all the way through to Canada, straight through the heart of the United States. And it was to include rail, pipelines, fiber optic, automobiles, trucks, you name it. And this thing was fought. We fought this stuff tooth and nail back then. And Rick Perry was just one formidable enemy at that point because he was pushing it like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah, that it was going to originate on the south end of it, on the west coast, down around Acapulco somewhere. I think right north of Acapulco, there's a big port city. And I think right there is where it was going to terminate on the south end. And it was for the Western trade Chinese, I guess. What do you think? That's
exactly right. And it was, I'm trying to think of the full name of the port. It had the word Cardenas in it. I can't remember.
Yeah, it was to bypass the west coast.
Yes, it was.
Totally. It was going to do an end run and then take rail and bring it up into the country.
Yes, actually the name of the port was Lázaro Cárdenas.
Yes, I believe that's right north of Acapulco, right?
It was a deep water port, and they wanted to connect that port to go straight in, all the way through the United States, straight into Mexico, or straight into Canada. And where Elaine Chao came in at the time, she was the one that was working the borders to create all this fancy technology that would let the Mexican trucks come up into America.
I see.
You know, with all the electronic passes and stuff.
Right.
Well, that's her bag. Now, she's in charge of our infrastructure in America now as Secretary of Transportation.
And her husband is...
that's right. So, you know, we got some things to watch, and I feel a little bit like, maybe like Reagan felt, we need to trust but verify.
Yeah, I'm not that optimistic because you got too many of the Goldman Sachs and other type of people around him.
And that's another issue.
But like immigration, some tax relief, things like this, things that he can get a handle on, probably is all we're going to see the first 4 years or so. And good job. The job market's going to get better. The economics going to get better. But it'll take time for that to happen. But big things that he might accomplish. He'll still be in the throes of that system. That's what I'm saying.
Well, the economic structure in America today is so fragile and so weak. It may be that Obama has just handed him an albatross to wear around his neck.
Well, he kept signing bills, executive orders all the way today. I'm thinking.
I know.
He tried to sabotage him as much as he could.
Yeah. So it's not a foregone conclusion in my mind that Trump will be able to turn the economy around at this point. I don't think he has a magic wand. I don't think anybody ever has, but he has some serious uphill sledding to do if he's going to somehow rescue this economy. And I'm all for it. If he can do it, I think that's fine. I want people in America to prosper. I'm glad when people do have jobs. I don't care almost what their job is. If you can, you know, support your family, that's great. But he's going to have a hard time fulfilling the promises that he's put out. And I don't think that's because, you know, he's disingenuous at all. I think he wants to. But, you know, on the other hand, the concept of making America great again, which I would support the concept.
Right.
The way to do that is to return rights to the people.
Exactly.
Not land included. You know, they need to.
Well, he mentioned things like that about we the people quite a bit in his speech.
He did, and that was good. But it's not just a matter of making deals like renegotiating NAFTA, which probably ought to be done anyway, or dumping TPP, which certainly ought to be dumped. Negotiating deals is not how you make America. That's not what made America great in the first place. What made America great was not only our political system, but also our right to own and enjoy private property. That means land, businesses, you know, to do what we want to do with it, not what the government tells us we can do.
Well, you remember the Homestead Act?
Yes.
Now, that seems like to me that put a lot of land in a lot of people's hands. And that's when this country started really prospering. That's what I'm thinking.
You're exactly right. They could do that again right now with, you know, with all, I mean, the government owns something like 635 million acres.
Yes, yes.
Can you imagine if they said, okay, look, we're going to give every person in the country, we're going to give, let's see.
600 acres.
Whatever. We're going to give them 2 acres or 3 acres or something like, whatever it is.
Right.
Just
right.
Divvy it up and give it to them.
Right.
It would create such a boom, an economic boom in our country that it would just set the world on fire.
Right. Well,
but I know that's not going to happen either.
Right. And well, he's dealing, the problem I see is that he's got this ego thing, right? Okay. And he's never overcome, he's been driven with this strong ego. But being the new job, the office of the presidency requires diplomacy and statesmanship. So there's going to be an inner struggle within him as to what side of the coin he's going to come down on. That's what I see.
Absolutely. It's going to be a whirlwind for the first 30 days.
Yes.
His head's going to be spinning.
Right.
Everybody's going to be pulling at him from one direction or another, and it's going to be very hard for him to keep his balance and see who's blowing smoke at him and who's not.
Right, right.
Because, you know, a lot of people are going to blow smoke at him. And he's got to see through that and say, hey, not now, bud. Get out of here. Get to the back of the line.
Well, there's so many people that want to talk to him now, right?
Huh? Every one of them has some policy they want to, you know.
But you know what I did the other day, and I it wasn't me that got it done, but about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago on Facebook, I put in there on my own page, that we ought to let the alternative press in there on that White House press room.
That would be
And I got all kinds of really encouraging feedback on it from people that follow me, you know. And then about a week later, 10 days later, Trump's people come out with, we're going to enlarge maybe the area and bring a lot of bloggers maybe in there and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm all for that, you know.
Yeah. The more press coverage they can have of a legitimate sort, the better.
Right, right. But I think the press room in the White House is pretty small. So they were thinking about moving it just to the west as executive office buildings and clearing out some offices or something, making a large area over there. I don't know.
That's right.
And that might work, you know. But, have you looked at the World Economic Forum any? Have you had a chance to look at that any?
I've been following it every day, actually.
Okay.
And, you know, everything. Oh my gosh. There's been a lot of speeches. One thing that was really astounding, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, but one of the top known economists in our country, Nobel laureate Joseph Stiglitz,
yes,
made an outright call for the abolishing of cash in America.
Oh,
my
gosh.
In other words, going to a completely digital system. And they tried this, the trial balloon happened in India just a couple of months ago.
Okay.
And India is withdrawing cash from its society right now. They're going 100% digital.
Right.
And even though the people have been revolting to a certain extent, it's gone well enough that now there's calls for it in the West as well. And Stiglitz was the first major U.S. economist to come right out and say it at Davos.
I see.
There was no mealy-mouth, nothing. He just said, we need to go to a cashless society in America.
Right, right. And that's like full slavery, lockdown city.
Well, it is. It is. It forced everybody into the system. And also, that's a hallmark of technocracy. I've talked about this.
Right, exactly, exactly, Patrick. You are way ahead on this.
Right. So what he's going to do about that, I don't know. I hope he takes the existing governorship of the Federal Reserve and fires them all. It'd be good if he just abolished the Fed totally and took back the power to create money with the Senate and the Treasury. That would be a wonderful thing. I don't know that he could get away with that, honestly. I think people have tried in the past and got killed for it.
The thing is, the problem that I see with Trump right now, the Goldman Sachs people, they have given rise to many of the chairmen or of the New York Fed. See what
yes.
I mean?
Oh,
and
yes,
so they're locked in. They dominate that New York Fed, which dominates the system. And
yes.
I don't see Trump's any policies changing with the Fed at all myself.
Well, I have seen, and I've been watching the Federal Reserve or the Fed system all around the world, the central bank system.
Okay.
Starting with the Bank for International Settlements, which is kind of in
charge
sure. of the whole thing.
Yeah, I know.
I have seen some signs in the past 3-4 years that even people within the central bank system are saying that the age of central banks is over. It's basically run its course, and they're looking to do something new. Now, I don't quite see their whole vision in this, but all I can say is I see they have a vision, and it doesn't necessarily include the central banking system of the world as we know it today.
I see.
I wouldn't be surprised if Goldman Sachs said, you know what, we need to abolish the Federal Reserve and do something else. It wouldn't shock me one bit, but I would be very concerned about what they think they're going to substitute, right?
Well, what I see is that it's going to resemble something like a financial tech type company, but it'll be an international one.
Yes.
And we'll all be subject to that one institution.
Well, once everything goes digital.
You see what I'm saying?
And then
we don't need the central banks because the clearing will be all on electronic clearing.
That's exactly right. A digital world will
right.
not require a central bank.
That's right. And then those ratings, like you suggested, out of China that you brought us on some of our past programs.
Yes.
That you brought our attention to. It'll
right.
be something like that. But what I see, and I watched the World Economic Forum for nearly 10 years or longer,
yep.
Even before I was a broadcaster, but. What they don't have a handle on the world economy, okay? But they're not talking about the debt that much. And that is the real big problem, it appears to me.
Well, it is. You know, if they're successful at converting to a digital system.
Right.
The debt no longer is an issue.
Right.
In my opinion. Because it's going to pave the way to just summarily monetize the debt without any concern of backlash from the currency that's currently in circulation.
Right, I see.
And there is a lot of cash in circulation right now. All over I'm talking about dollars and other currencies as well, but especially dollars. There are dollar bills and $100 bills and even higher denominations around the world that they have to deal with. If they were to do anything with the international system, they have to deal with that money.
Right.
But if that money is called in and put into a digital system,
right,
then they can do stuff behind the scenes that will make the debt meaningless.
I see. You know what Stiglitz also, I have him on one of his recordings. I recorded one of his statements about 5-6 minutes long. He also said that the European Union's mistake was a single monetary unit called the euro.
Yes.
He said those southern states, especially in their southern countries, could not adjust as their economies deteriorated and so forth. There was
yes.
no means to adjust, and they were being dictated to by the European Union as far as austerity programs.
Yes, and I also see signs in Europe that the European Union, the whole concept of the EU right now, is being this process is starting to throw it under the bus. Altogether,
right, right.
For the very reasons that you mentioned, that it ain't working, it had its purpose for a while because it broke down nationalism.
Right.
It did a lot of stuff to each one of the countries along the way, but its transforming power has basically worked all the magic it can.
Right.
And now there's people that are actually, you know, even from the inside, are saying, well, you know what? It looks like that, you know, the EU may well just fall apart.
Right, exactly. And there's resistance to the dominance of the Germans anyway, see?
That's right.
So, and then, of course, this immigration is just a mess over there besides. Yeah. But, the World Economic Forum, but what they also are suffering from, that I see, and this is just a very big problem, is that, there were some people talking about the black box. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And if you know what a black box is, you can't see what the inner workings of the black box is.
That's right.
But there's input and output, see?
Yep.
And so now the opposite to the black box is a clear box, a glass box, or a white box, okay?
Uh-huh.
But here's the problem with what's going on with any of this, reform or people being able to see. And this is where my delusional idea, I think it has some merit, okay, is that the conditioning by the colleges and universities and higher learning have conditioned everybody into thinking within boxes, diagram boxes. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it's like a man going to Hyde Park in London, dragging a soapbox, right? And then putting that soapbox up there and talking, but all he knows is from out inside that soapbox. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they've been conditioned. So World Economic Forum is another conditioning process from the very top leadership down and top money people. See what I mean? So they had to create an idea called economics that had a credible a backing from people to give credit, to give a validity to the financial and banking operations.
Well, yeah, and you've got of all the corporate interests that would attend a place like the WEF,
right?
Those are the ones that support sustainable development, that support green economy, and all that stuff that the United Nations bring, which is technocracy.
Exactly, exactly. And
they have created what they themselves admit is a $13 trillion industry by investing in so-called quote unquote green industry, green investments.
Right.
These are technocracy oriented investments, I might add, and they're spending money on it like there's no tomorrow. That's why I believe that there's such an emphasis at the World Economic Forum talking about the fourth industrial revolution.
Yes, 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 yes.
They're talking about artificial intelligence. They're talking about robotics, Internet of Things is huge.
Right, right, right.
And I see this as being big on their mind. You know, I also see several countries, including ours, experimenting with universal basic income.
Okay.
And this is the idea that
they put that forward this year there at Davos. Yeah,
robotics is just going to destroy, literally just decimate the labor market all around the world, especially in America, as we may face up to 50% employee displacement because of robotics in the next 15 to 20 years.
Well,
the way they're going to answer that is with a universal basic income where all the people can't find work simply just get a check in the mail.
Well, that sounds like helicopter money, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does sound like helicopter money.
I mean, where they just drop money into your account?
If it's all digital, it won't matter.
Well, then that's where we're headed, for sure. Now, in 74 is when they started the electronic banking. They founded those ideas at the UN.
Yes.
That's where I trace it back to. I don't know, you might have an earlier, but 74, around that 70-ish, 74, yep, is when they started having these meetings and seminars on electronic banking. And of course, credit cards was a step. The smart card came out of the Tavistock Institute. See what I mean? And so, and that's where, now, Stiglitz is a mixture for me, a mixed bag. He's one of the few economists that can tell you the truth at times, but he's all for authoritarianism.
Oh, totally.
That's the problem with him, see?
Yes, you're
so
right.
So he'll come out with a little bit more of the truth at times than some of the other economists.
I think you're right. I followed Stiglitz for years.
Yeah.
And there have been times when I supported some of the things he said.
Exactly. I have a mixed feeling about him all the time. You know, and then he'll come out with this, you know, cashless society, and then other things he'll tell us about the euro being a mistake, see?
Exactly.
So, So anyway, it goes like that.
You know, another guy that backed up his call, by the way, for Cashless Society, immediately backed up his call was Kenneth Rogoff.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Harvard University.
Yeah, they've been floating this at previous seminars in the last year or two that I've tracked down.
Yes.
At previous World Economic Forum events and other things, they've been putting that out.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a hot topic right now. It's on their mind. I don't know what we can do about it. They control the money. But I see this is what's coming, and this is very much a play for technocracy, because if you are ever going to bring in an energy-based currency, you must have a digital currency to do it. You must.
I see.
Whether they intend to do that, still another story. But looking at the United Nations, looking at their sustainable development and their whole focus on energy and stuff, I can easily see a global currency that would be based on energy production and consumption. I could easily see that.
Now, there was one event that something about carbon-based trading is coming back or is back now. I didn't get to look at that. But when you take that carbon footprint combined with this cashless society, the technocracy is there, right?
It is. That's exactly what it is. And it's a great alarm, because it'll result in a scientific dictatorship.
Yes, yes.
Just as quick as you can blink an eye, one day it's going to slam shut on us, and everybody's going to wonder, what the heck happened?
Well, does Trump understand these issues, I wonder?
I don't have any indication that he understands anything about technocracy.
Okay, okay.
I don't see it. I haven't heard one speech. I haven't heard
Oh, there was one guy that I saw. What was the man over there that represented Trump? What's his name? I can't think of it right offhand. He told about how he joined the Trump campaign.
Uh-huh.
He was working for two other presidential candidates, and he told Trump, he said, my loyalty right now is I'm employed by these people. I just can't drop them. And Trump told him, he said, if I beat those people, will you come and join me? And he said, yes. And that happened, see?
Yeah.
but anyway, he's very sharp. I'm trying to remember his name, but I'll put when I publish this conversation, probably this weekend, I'll put a notation on my website and make sure but this guy was really sharp guy. I mean, he's got some very, very brilliant people around him.
I agree with that.
But they're going to be controlled by the big money. The Bank of International Settlements is still there, and so forth. And I did interview recently Birkenfell, Bradley, Lucifer's banker. Okay, and he broke up the secret bank accounts in Switzerland. In the very end. I mean, I get down to the bottom line eventually, sooner or later, but pretty quickly sometimes. But we got down at the end of the program, the end of the 57 minutes and 47 seconds. I told him, I said, there's a problem, though, still in the war. And he said, what is that? And I said, they can go to Indonesia, China, wherever. There's other banks that'll take their money in a secrecy anyway. And he agree. Yeah, he agreed with me on that.
Right.
But they paid him $104 million. Because of the money he repatriated to the Treasury Department here.
Wow, fantastic.
Anyway.
Why couldn't we stumble on something like that?
Anyway, I've got to get on down the road, Patrick, but I really enjoyed you coming on at a late time here, unplanned and so forth, but you're really a fine person, and you really come down on the right side, that's for sure.
Well, hey, thanks, George. I'm glad that you called me. This is good.
Okay, Patrick. Thank you. That was Patrick Wood, author of Technocracy Rising, and we got his site up there this evening. You'll be able to go in there and click in and buy his book and read his site. It's a wonderful site. Thank you, and good night, Patrick.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, this is George Butler back after that. Patrick Wood is one of the finest guests that we've had on this program over the years, because what he's been able to do is express himself in very concise and very clear terms, okay? And so in doing that, then he brought about a greater understanding of what we're up against. Donald John Trump, new president, recently inaugurated president of the United States, is still up against a whirlwind of criticism and attacks that are still coming from the media, from the mainline media. It's coming from the feminist left. And there's today in Washington, D.C., earlier today in Washington, D.C., there was several hundred thousand women were there on the mall and demonstrating and for women's rights. And also much of it was directed for criticism and protest of Trump's election and so forth. So what we're up against here is a very, very virulent anti-Trump women's coalition building. And the Democrats have just, they've just heightened the hate and resentment for Trump ever since he was finally elected. And it's not going to do anyone any good. Well, Madonna said something about love today, but I don't think the crowd was in the mood for that. And there was this other speeches that were very, very, very nasty. In fact, I think at one time when Trump described Hillary as being a very nasty person, well, they're picking up that theme in this women's protest movement today in Washington, D.C., and then they're using that as a basic theme to put forward their own ideas and their objections to Trump and this new administration that's going in. Trump did not leave he left behind many people. He's a go-getter. He doesn't let grass grow under his feet. So he's out there already signing executive orders to try to minimize the impact, the negative impact of Obamacare and so forth. And also he signed other proclamations and so forth, reinforcing his recent cabinet appointments and so forth. But he's a go-getter. He's going to get out there and do a lot of things. And they're just not very happy with him being that type of a very aggressive individual. He's an alpha male. But he's got this ego also, and he's been driven to accomplish a lot in building the Trump organization and the golf courses and so forth. Now, in my own opinion, what's going to come about is that the chief executive officer of the United States, the president of the United States, is the executive officer of the executive branch, but he has to deal with a judiciary and a legislative branch that in a much different way than before. Now, he has Priebus in there, Rince Priebus, as his head man, his head advisor, you know, chief of staff is what he's called. And so he's going to try to guide him through some of this legislative stuff. But I see right away, he went to, after the swearing-in ceremony, they had a big luncheon. And he's a gregarious person, and he's a very friendly person. Even though he did combat with these people during the primary, and then especially during the presidential campaign against Hillary, he still was friendly to Hillary and Bill and other people that he had fought tooth and nail during the campaign. So he's not an individual that harbors a lot of resentment and hatred that I see, even though he's not going to give you an advantage. And if you've really done him harm, he's not going to provide you the platform to continue to criticize him and do him harm, sir. So right now, he's a very diplomatic person because he's a winner. He's in the spotlight. And it was a heck of a parade. He got out of the limousine twice and strolled down once alone with Melania and once with his family. And so he's trying to be the president for the people, by the people, and we the people. So I don't know how this is all going to shake out in the very end, but I believe it's going to be a mixed bag. I think what the presidential, the Trump administration is going to bring us is some meaningful reform. I think the immigration will be a major thing of reform, and there's some taxes and bring us jobs and so forth. But as far as any reform in the Fed or anything else, I don't think that's going to happen. But we can only hope for 3 to 5 different goals that he exhibited. And the Obamacare, they're already going after that. So he's going to fulfill that promise to repeal that, and that will be done very quickly. But anyway, I want to thank everyone out there in our listening audience for listening over the years, where you've listened to one program or 600 of all of our programs over the years. We want to thank you very much for your loyal support. And thank you and good night.